God have mercy. Don't confuse me. Let me live in my dream world that why you turn satchel, I'm done him, not on me, Ari. Forget it. Let it stand. You tell him, Aaron Rakefit told you, this is what the Rav told him. And if he challenges my integrity, there's a long way to go. You understand?
I understood him.
No, you understood him well, but he doesn't know what he's talking about. In 1982, I have a picture in my book on the Rav. Irwin Shapiro is talking to the Rav. You know what's happening? It's at the Reitz dinner. And Irwin has come over to the Rav. And he says, Rebbe, I just bought an apartment in Israel. What do I do when I go to Israel? And the Rav said to him, as only the Rav could, Irwin, you don't fold Kedusha into your pocket. That's the answer. That's Reb Chaim. That's the Chacham. It means very simple. When you're in America, it's 2 days. And when you're in Israel, it's 1 day. You can't bring the Kedusha of America to Israel.
And I doubt him like every other American.
Exactly. The only thing I said to do, because it's Kafta, the Lomanach Tfilin, so what I did, whenever I'm in Chutz Laretz, Yantav Sheni, I go back to my room, lock the door, and pull down the shades, and I put on tefillin with the Tanai. If it's a Zman tefillin, it's tefillin. If not, it's Kishut B'Alma, and I don't make a bracha.
What about
and I say Shema. Pesach, Sukkish, Shavuos. The only day that you don't have a problem is Rosh Hashanah, and you don't have a problem Yom Kippur. It's a miracle. I'm in favor that anyone living in Golis should keep 2 days Yom Kippur. I'm in favor, 100%. My dear friends, let's roll. You can't win. And yet, Shani, you can't win. He asked me for a psak. I gave him a psak. And imagine a YU graduate tells a story about the Rav, Nishkeshtegen, Nishkeflegen. Okay.
And the last time you mentioned, you said you can't lose.
You can't win, you can't lose. What can I tell you? No, you lose because it's Brachat Levatala. October 21st, 2012, Sunday, a big hello to the students sitting in front of me and a big hello to all those listening across the Jewish world, the wide expanse of the Jewish world. First of all, I just want to make a correction of last week. A student called me earlier today and heard last Sunday's shiur. And it seems I was talking about chalitza, and first I said it correctly, that the woman takes off the man's shoe, then I said the man takes off the woman's shoe. So I have to tell you, it's a pasuk in Chumash, v'chaltza, lashon nekeva, the woman takes off the man's shoe. But I know why I made the mistake the other way, because have you ever seen a chalitza shoe? I told you, I saw the chalitza shoe many times. I saw it in YU when they did chalitza, I saw it in the museum in Toronto. And whenever my wife goes shopping for shoes in America or goes to look at the latest styles, they have fancy shoes that are hundreds of dollars. I say to Malka, are you crazy? What are they asking for? Hundreds of dollars to buy a chalitza shoe? I never yet saw a man wearing a chalitza shoe, but I saw plenty of women spending the money. So that I want to correct. The first time I said it correctly. The second time the wires got crossed. Okay. Another matter, remember I asked the question about reading the Torah, Simchas Torah night. So a Talmud of mine, Dr. Alan Blau, who's a fine Talmud Chacham, referred me to his father's Sefer. And it doesn't solve the problem, but it's interesting. His father is Robert Blau, if that means anything to you, Bobby Blau. In Hebrew it's Alta Asher Yeshayahu Blau. He was a Talmud of the Rav at an earlier period than I was. He was a Talmud already in probably the early 50s, I would say. Sefer Efne Ve'eshne. It's a Sefer of Rabbi Blau's Chidushim, and he has from the Rav in the Sefer. So if you go to page 118, you'll find something very interesting. The Rav comes up with a theory, and he says it all, but he said he heard it from the Rav. It would be interesting to know who the Rav heard it from. But the Rav said, what happens Simchas Torah night? Simchas Torah night, the Gabbai has to get the Torahs ready for the next day. So what are you doing? You're opening the Torah and you're doing Glila to go to Bereshit and to go to Chatan Torah, to go to Vesot HaBracha. And then you need a Torah for the Maftir, for the Korban Hayom. So the Rav said, when you open the Torah, it creates an obligation of Kriya. And that's why perhaps they read the Simchas Torah night, because since they're opening the Torah, it creates an obligation of Kriyat HaTorah. But 1 second, no, I saw my grandchildren doing it. But anyway, it doesn't solve the problem, because even if it creates an obligation, how do you go and make brachat levatalar at a time that there's no Kriyat HaTorah? So Dr. Blau agreed with me that it doesn't solve the problem that we asked, but it's an interesting concept from the Rav. If anyone knows anyone who davened in Maimonides, and here we have to be angry at Rabbi Reuben, that he went to the Rebbe, and Rabbi Reuben is not a chassid, he's a litvak, and Simchas Torah night he went to the Boston Rebbe, so we're stuck. We don't know what the Rav did. I still don't have the problem solved, and everyone I ask the question, everyone tells me, it's a good question. No shul that respects itself in Jerusalem reads the Torah, Simchas Torah night, and everyone blames it on the Vilna Gaon. And I looked into Maisa Rav. The Maisa Rav says the Gaon did 3 aliyot, not 5 at night, he did 3. I don't have an answer yet. If anyone can solve it, b'bakasha. Okay, let us roll.
We used to read it in Elizabeth,
right. Yeah, but that doesn't prove anything.
But
Elizabeth was...
I'm
telling you, in Jerusalem, they don't read it. You're just adding to my question. In America, everyone read the Torah at night. As far as I can recall, I don't remember a shul that didn't read the Torah at night. And yet, how do you read the Torah? Where does it come from? Okay. Seder. I'm waiting to hear what the Rav did. I would like to know what the Vilna Gaon really did, and why the contradiction between what they do in Beis Yosef, what they do in Ohel Rivka, what we do in the shul where I davened with my children.
What did Mekas
Arav?
Because Mekas
Arav was Rav Kook. Dinitziv, the Talmud of Dinitziv. I don't know. It has to be checked. I don't know. Anyone know what they do in Mekas Arav? But I'm interested in knowing what really was the Gaon Shita. Okay.
And you don't think that's a good answer, just kabod with Torah, because you've taken the...
No, the problem is, you're reading the Torah, it's a tshuva of dinitziv. Chelek aleph meshiv dava tshuva yud zayin. But it's not, you don't need dinitziv for this, but dinitziv is very fascinating. But kriyat haTorah, you're making brachot. What's wrong with a tourist coming to Israel and keeping 2 days yantar? What's wrong? The problem is brachot levatala. He's making kiddush when he shouldn't be. He's davening musaf when he shouldn't. So those are brachot levatala. To be an isa d'oraita, lo tisad shem Hashem elokecha l'ashav. It could be an isa d'oraita. It is an isa d'oraita. Safek brachot lahakel because of that reason. So if you suddenly decide to read the Torah at a time when there's no tikkun chazal, why was the Rav so angry with that Yom HaTzmut, why you, when the Bnei Akiva kids went and read the Torah, I think, on a Wednesday morning? The Rav got hysterical, because it's brachot levatala. That's the problem. It comes up in the Netziv with Cincinnati, with the famous case, where that, by the way, this tshuva, if I'm not mistaken, is translated into English by Freehoff. If you're familiar with Freehoff's work on responsible literature, Freehoff, what was his first name?
Solomon
Freehoff, right. Solomon B. Freehoff, I believe it was. So he was rabbi in Pittsburgh, the Reform rabbi. And he had a tremendous interest in response literature. He published 2 volumes that anyone can touch. The third one is on Reform responsa. But he published 2, one on the history of responsa and 1 responsa literature. It's like a fabulous Talmud Chacham. He was very close to the Orthodox rabbi, Rabbi Zev Leiter. So whenever he had a shaila, what the meaning is, he went to Rabbi Leiter. So in the treasury of responsa, he translates about 50 examples of responsa literature from different periods. One of the tshuvot, I believe, he translates as Yud Zayin of Dinitziv, because it reflects this is America. A balabas made money, dedicated in Aron Kodesh, and never he tells the rabbi, next Sunday I want everyone to be invited to see what a rich, wonderful man I am, and I want you to call me to the Torah. I should make the brachot in front of the men, women, and children. And never the poor rabbi, and he writes to the Netziv, and the Netziv doesn't start to understand America. he, the Nitziv says, how can a person talk like that? How can it be, to quote the Nitziv, a mitzvah haba ba'avera? You follow? And this is the real problem. Now this came out, I don't want to repeat myself, I think I told you, it came out during World War II. In World War II, there was the Jewish, what's called the Jewish Welfare Board? JWB. The Jewish Welfare, right, the Jewish Welfare Board represented all branches of so-called Judaism. It was Orthodox, Conservative, Reform. When they gave an answer to a question, it had to be by unanimous decision. So one of the questions they got was, can you read the Torah Friday night? When that's the only time the Jewish soldiers, because by generally you didn't fight by night, you fought by day. It's not like today. Today, my son-in-law, my eldest son-in-law, once came home from the army years ago when he was rising in rank, and he was in weapons development, and he takes me out on my terrace. He says, "Saba, look through this." I it was about 11, 12 o'clock at night. I don't stop that late at my age, but I was a kid then. I look out of the terrace, it was broad daylight. So they have that. And this was night sight that he helped develop. He's a graduate of Mahon Lev, electro-optics. He helped develop the night sight on Merkava 2 and Merkava 3. On Merkava 4, they say it's the most advanced tank in the world today. So today we fight at night. But in World War II, generally you did not fight at night. You fought by day. You killed enough by day, enough got killed, and then at night you slept in the foxhole. So if they could get together, it would be Friday night. Can you read the Torah? So the JWB gave a psak. You can read the Torah, but you can't make brachot. And that's a good psak, because to read the Torah, fine. If you don't make brachot, there's no bracha levatala. So that's where it comes up in response to literature. But we're still without an answer. What was the Vilna Gaon's practice?
How about
halal with a bracha on Yom Ha'atzmaut? That's the whole question. Are you allowed to make a bracha? To say halal is not a question. So you do whatever the minyan does. That's what I'll answer you. There's plenty of room to say you have to make a bracha. Gemara in Psachim Daf Kuf Ted Vav, the miracles that happen. I personally say without a bracha. I say v'noma lefan of Shira Chadasha, Halleluka, and I say halal. I can't say with a bracha because the Rav didn't say with a bracha. And the things that I spoke with the Rav about, I can't innovate. I can't put on tchelet tzitzit. Why can't I put on tchelet tzitzit? I should put on tchelet. It's Eretz Yisrael. It's tchelet. We're rediscovering. We're rebuilding. We're recreating a Jewish state.
Was the Rav in his full mind during
Mohammed Atzmaut? The Rav? Why was Nina's full mind?
When did he die?
Mori Urebi, when did he die? A few years ago. He died in 1993.
Oh, I thought
that 1993. No. He wasn't in a full... Lo Aleinu, he, from about 1980 on, he suffered. But until then, he was fine. Okay, from 1980, the Alzheimer's, the Parkinson's, gut, so God should spare us.
Wait a second, wasn't it last year in 85?
Last year was in 85, but
how could it be that he had Alzheimer's?
Yitzchak, if you would have seen what went on, I went in 83. Don't ask questions. I greatly admire the students who stood by the Rav in the 80s because they loved Rebbe. Many of them are black as black can be. They don't understand one word of the Rav's Hashkafa. They take Rakefet's footnotes quoting Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein and they blot it out of the biography in the first volume of the Rav, but they're the greatest people in the world. Because they gave Rebbe Kovet Sefer Torah Shebala, you understand? And I went in 83, I cried. And by the way, his mind was good. The day I was there, his mind was good. I spoke with him, but very slow. Remember the way the Rebbe used to shoot at Kishisim? We sat there, it was like a machine gun going. God salah him. But he was in and out, and it got worse and worse. And 85, the last year was 5th day Hanukkah, 1985. And it got worse, and God have mercy on us. We should have long life and health and continue Lahabit's Torah, Lahagdir Torah, Lahadira. Okay, now, let me row and let me continue and come into basic understanding. We saw the Rishonim Milonu Yoter Gadol, then the Rush, then the Rashba, and we saw how important practice is. And even in Issa V'Heta, if we're in doubt, Rofefet, to use the word of the Yerushalmi, Rofefet, Rofef, it's a Matan Hebrew word as well. If we're in doubt, the practice determines what we have to do. And then we hit a crescendo. I introduce you to Professor Menachem Elon. As I told you, he used to sit in my classes, 69, 70. He lived around the corner. I can show you just where he lived. On Rehov HaBabanel, BMT began the Anglo-Toric history for men and women was changed by a little house on Rehov HaBabanel 24. It's a senior citizens building. Today my mother spent her final 2-3 years there. If you walk to the end of HaBabanel, you dead end, I think it's Ibn Shaprut, that's where Professor Alon lives. He's not well today. He's like the Rav Loa Leinu. So he used to come in and he wanted to hear a Talmud of the Rav. It was something very rare. 1969, an American should come in Aliyah, a Talmud of the Rav, or someone who gave a Shia NYU. It was a rare thing. So, and we became quite friendly, and he was an Adam Gadol, had tremendous knowledge, and he, a lawyer, and Mishpat Evri is a fabulous work. I can't read it in English because I have a lot of difficulty reading Shas and Paiskim in English, but I have the Hebrew, I have the original Hebrew edition. It's a world, and no one equaled him. In other words, there were Chernowitz, if you recall, I don't go into details, there was Weiss, there were others who wrote in the history of Halacha, but no one put it together. Chaim Chernowitz later taught in the Hebrew Union College. Now, he wasn't Reform, but he certainly was no longer strictly Orthodox, let's put it that way. Reb Menachem Alon, Professor Alon, if you're familiar with Mishpat Evri, it is a fabulous presentation of a divine legal system, which Torah is. Torah Shema Per is divine, and he puts it into legal context. And those volumes are fabulous. Now, I have trouble with the volumes when he compares it to the legal systems, and he uses Latin words, you know, of law. So then I have trouble. But as far as Shas and Paiskim, there I rejoice. His footnotes, his knowledge, voluminous. Now, so he made the point that he showed you the Bavli says exactly what the Yerushalmi says in relation to Chlitza. And he made the point that the Bavli does not say Minhag Mevatel Halacha. And he makes the point, and it's not original with Professor Alon. I've seen this point before, that whoever edited the Gemara in Yerushalmi simply copied the words of the sugya from Bava Metzia when it deals with Dinei Mamonot, where everyone agrees Minhag Mevatel Halacha. So they copied it in Issa V'Heta, but you don't have to take it literally. And of course, that opens a Pandora's box, which I elaborated upon. If you get hooked on scientific Talmudic scholarship, you can spend your whole life trying to solve the dilemma. How was the Talmud put together? Who put it together? What order was it put together? And so much has been written.
The Amoraim
covers 400 years.
But that's
the Talmud. I understand. But you have one base medrash on top of another, one era on top of another. How could it all be written at the same time? Who wrote it? They wrote it at the end. Why disorganization? Why not chronological organization? Anyway, hundreds of thousands of pages have been written on this topic. I gave you a list of some of the people you know who dealt with it. The redaction of the Babylonian Talmud. The Jerusalem Talmud, endless names, Rabbi Dr. Melech Shechta, Professor Louis Ginsberg, Professor Abraham Weiss, Professor Hanoch Albeck. You're dealing today with Professor Zussman, just put out, he's in his 80s, he put out tremendous work on variant readings in the Talmud. There's no end to what can be done. So, of course, this has now come up in Israel. Israel is exploding with people learning Torah, with children being educated. We're trying to find a way to reach out to a child. Everyone raises the question, why isn't the kid in the religious high school inspired by learning Talmud? How do you inspire him? How do you do it? And this question haunts us, the same thing, not only here in America. It's not what it was in my time. In my time, at the age of 13, 14 already, I could learn better than a 15, 16-year-old kid today. In my time, you came in, it was a different world to be a Jew. If you were one out of a million who embraced Torah, you had Rebbeim from Shanghai, read, study Washington. Washington has just been praised in a blog. I just was told I have to read it, Baruch Hashem. Emet V'Amuna, Harry Merrilis's blog. Okay, Washington. Read Washington. We sang, we danced, we swam. Yam HaTalmud. So now they came up with the theory Ravadim, if I'm pronouncing it correctly, right? I was layers teach the kid. No, my own theory is very simple. And I end it off, we want to go further. But let me just state it again. My own theory is very simple. You don't confuse a kid. Let a kid master Shas and Paiskim. When he's a master, then if he's interested, he can go into scientific Torah scholarship. It's also a Kiyum of Talmud Torah. And he can come up with his theories. I want to add one postscript. And I'll come to this much later with the halachic contest in Chayshin Mishpat. No, it's not for now. But you see, the Chazon Ish has a fabulous letter. I happen to know who this letter was written to. As a matter of fact, it's two brothers. One is still alive, should live and be well. I taught their children. They were Talmidim of the Chazon Ish who broadened. One brother wound up a Mekubal in Tzfat, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, lost a son in the Lebanese War, the Melchemet Shlomo Galil, 1982, Lo Aleinu, had a wonderful No, I'm talking about his brother. And he had a wonderful daughter who was my student. Then he has a younger brother who winds up in America and winds up today, after many years of teaching, I believe in Cleveland, if I'm not mistaken, winds up in Boca, where he gives three different classes in my student, Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg's congregation. They are, Baruch Hashem, Herbie, they are the ones who got the letter from the Chazon Ish. And the Chazon Ish slaps their faces and tells them off, and their attitudes, not for now, their attitude towards the Gaon, and how they're praising scientific scholarship, and they're implying because of the Kitve Yad, we can know more than the Vilna Gaon. And the Chazon Ish finally says, and with all the Kitve Yad, and all that you will amend the Talmud, how do you know that the variant reading is the correct one? And you see, there's a lot of truth to this.
He doesn't think much of the
rug. Please, please, let him be in the classroom and we'll argue with him. I don't want to argue with him through a third person. He's a fabulous guy, and he knows a great deal, and I taught his daughter, and his daughter, you know, she's moved, she's one of the big shots in Chovevei Torah, in that camp today. Lo darcheichem darki, v'lo machshavoteichem machshavti, but let it stand. But I have to respect, they're frum, and they're good, and they're learned, but the Chazon Ish puts the needle in. And I got to tell you, there's a lot of truth to it. In other words, I always used to say, Professor Avram Weiss, I knew him personally. Yitzchak, did you know him personally? Were you in his home? We were Bronx people. Azaziskeit, such knowledge, just by heart, without exaggeration. You got to read the memoir that his wife wrote. He was friendly with all the Gedolim in Warsaw. He married a student, you know, he was an old buck. These scholars never get married. Somehow, 20 years to a 15-year difference, they finally wake up. They got to get married. All right, they marry a student. Can I inherit? They had three wonderful children, and his wife was an Isha Gedolah. And I used to look at his Sfarim, and I would discuss it. I was just, you know, what can I tell you? I was a kid very interested in this. So I once said, Professor Weiss repastes the entire Shas. He gives it a whole new order. But when everything is said and done, why is his order any better than the original order? And Rakefet adds a vote that I will not elaborate now, but I think I could cite the Rav on this. I have a lot to say, but it's not for now. It's when I deal with the Siman and Choshen Mishpat Chavchet. But I want to tell you something. There's Hashgacha Pratit in life. In other words, the fact that this is the Gemara, this is what has survived, this is what we have, this is our Shas. Chachmat Yisrael is very nice. I don't want to be an idiot and put it down. But if you find the fragment in the Geniza ghetto, it can't upset the whole apple cart. The fact is, it was in the Geniza. It was not in front of the Rishonim. All right, it may have a bit of influence, but it has to be seen within context. Okay, so... I'm quoting the Chazal Ish. What do you want out of me? But I'm hearing the Hashgacha Pratit. Yes, I don't know if he uses that exact word. Yeah, say that. Whatever you say, after you told me what you told me before, Shia, you're the boss. I'm only your humble servant, Moshe. You got it? You're the boss.
Here in Israel, Professor
Schweike. Schweike, yeah.
$25 million.
Right.
For the purpose of putting on in the computer all the Geniza.
Right. They're doing that right now. You have no idea what's going on. It's fabulous. And any scholar will be able to approach the Geniza and get any document, and now they're working out all the secondary literature on every document will be available to you as well. And you're looking at a Jew who was inside the Cairo Geniza. I was in the Geniza in Oxford. And you have no idea what a sight that is. A friend of mine, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha, Cambridge. To me, it's all the same, but I was in Cambridge, correct? They're putting the Kitvei Yad with telling you where it's located, and they're giving you a picture of the Ktav Yad and the text as well.
It's very hard to read the manuscript.
You have to be able to read it. You got to be like my friend who took me into the Geniza, Rabbi Doctor Professor Tzvi Groner. You have to be able to read that Ktav Yad. But Professor Schechter, Solomon Schechter.
Okay,
he didn't discover it. He didn't discover it. The fact there was a Geniza was everyone knew about it. But we Torah Jews are a different species. I don't want to translate that. I don't want to shock the boys, the young rabbis. We don't have sense. There was a word timer was in Cairo getting stuff found. Big problem with Chacham Yerushalmi Jew. He remembered he had a kiddush he had to go to. He remembered he had to have some Yerushalayim kugel. So instead of finishing the job, he came back to Yerushalayim. He came back to his shul, came back to his chevra, came back to his dafyomi, whatever you want to say, his kugel, his liquor, whatever a Jew enjoys. Solomon Schechter heard about it, and he and a guy named Taylor was an assistant to him. They got, I think it was two spinsters who had a pile of money, gave them money, go to Cairo, spend bakshish, all the bribes, whatever you need, come back when you have totally exhausted what's in the Geniza. And he bribed, got donkeys, put sacks on the donkeys, got it to the boat, got it to England. What he took out of Egypt, and you not slew it, Mitzrayim, if I tell you it's worth $100 billion, I'm probably underestimating what it's worth. Okay, that's the Cairo Geniza. And when all is said and done, yes, you can do wonders. But still, the daf is the daf. This is what we have. And this is what we have to inculcate our youngsters. When you know it backwards and forwards, tavakasha, go further and do as you wish from the point of view of scholarship. Now, how do I know that what I'm saying is correct? Because even taking Professor Alon's approach And even saying that minhag mevatel halacha should not be said in relation to isa v'heta, how do I know I'm right? Because one thing is for sure, minhag plays a big role. All right, you're not going to be so sharp. You're not going to be so arrogant. You're not going to be so boisterous. You're not going to be so truculent. You're not going to say, minhag mevatel. But minhag plays a tremendous role by isa v'heta. And my dear students, whenever we're in doubt, isa v'heta, of very delicate issues, fukhazi, the minhag on the street, wins out. And here I'll show you an interesting tshuva from one of the famous end of the Rishonic period. This is when the Jews are reestablishing themselves. This is, I'm quoting to you here. Again, it's a quote from Shelet HaTshuvot Rashbash. We don't have a real edited edition. It's the old-fashioned printing where letters are combined to save money. Are you aware of that? Like Aleph Lamed, they'll print in one letter. So it's a little hard to read. Who is the Rashbash? It's the son of the Tashbetz, Reb Shlomo ben Shimon Duran, the son of Reb Shimon the Tashbetz. Shuvat Shimon ben Duran is the Tashbetz. This is his son.
Who is the Tashbetz?
The Rav of Algiers. Why is that? I'll explain that. This is what were the years of the son? 1400 to 1467, approximately. We know when he died. The date of birth is an approximation, as they say in scholarship, circa. You follow me, Simcha? We don't know for sure. Why was this period so important? I'll tell you why. This is when the Jews are being driven out of Spain and Portugal. Where are they going? They're going to North Africa. And here, you're coming to a point where there's a tremendous thirst for knowledge in the sense, tradition. What did we do? How did we live? The expulsion, the heartache, the murder, the conversions, all that went on. The Inquisition, a lot was lost. So the Tashbetz and his son, the Rashbash, become very important as far as the Shelet and Shuvit of this period. If I'm not mistaken, on the Tashbetz, a doctorate was done at JTS on his influence on the period, analyzing the Shuvit. Now, what I'm quoting from is Shelet and Shuvit Rashbash, Siman 562, Tak Sab, in the single standard edition we have, it's on page Kuf Yud Aleph Amid Aleph and Kuf Yud Aleph Amid Bet. And it's exactly what we've been saying in class. He gets the question, what does it mean, minhag mevatel halacha? Everyone says that the minhag knocks out halacha. How can a minhag knock out halacha? So tshuva, he says right away, when it comes to dini mamonot, minhag can knock out halacha. And just our explanation, whenever you speak about dini mamonot, you talk about guidance. You don't talk about halacha that is binding. And this is why when it comes to dini mamonot, minhag can knock out halacha. But what about isa v'heta? What about the concept that we keep on talking about, that when the woman has to take off the man's shoe, am I saying it right now? Okay? When the woman has to take off the man's shoe, what is considered a shoe? Eliyahu HaNavi plays no role. We tell him, get lost. What counts is what people call a shoe. And he says, this is what it means in isa v'heta. Minhag, what people do, that is what the Torah wanted out of us. It's as if to say when the Torah said b'chaltza et na'alo, that the woman takes off a shoe, how do you define a shoe? By what people consider a shoe. And therefore a sandal, which if you recall how I explained it with the Yerushalmi weeks ago, which is not the best of shoes, it doesn't cover the entire foot, but it's a shoe. People call it a shoe. It's not a beach shoe, it's not a house shoe. It's a shoe. It's good. It counts. It was good chalitza. And then he ends off the tshuva, he says, minhag in Isa v'heta, he says, you can only have a minhag to forbid that which is permitted, but you can't have a minhag to permit that which is forbidden. In other words, he's warning us that there's an end to minhag. You cannot. Right. That it's not that you can say minhag mevatal halacha in the sense that we do it when it comes to dini mamonet. You can't say, all right, in New York City, the minhag was that they, God have mercy, on the eighth day of Pesach already they were breaking bread. You understand? You can't say a minhag like that. You can't say in the New York, not only New York City, in the rabbinate, I have this in the Suva era, but in Australia and South Africa until today, when is the main service? Friday night. What goes on Friday night? I was in Australia. I saw it with my own eyes. Shabbos begins 5 o'clock. No one is home from business at 5 o'clock. So how does the shul work? And all the shuls are Orthodox. Well, they daven mincha 4:45. 5 o'clock, the rabbi teaches a class. 5:30, Kabbalah Shabbos. By 6:30, everyone is there. That's when the rabbi preaches the sermon. And afterwards, Baruch Hu and Marav. You're going to say minhag? How can a minhag allow Chilul Shabbos? You follow? It's the Australian or the South African version of the late Friday night service in America. You fellas don't know anything about that today because you have different problems. But when I was going into the rabbinate, or even earlier, the 1920s, the 1930s, the 1940s, the late Friday night service during the winter, every Orthodox rabbi faced that dilemma. New York City, all right, Brooklyn, you had frum Jews. Somewhat frum. It's not like today. The Bronx, a handful. The West Side, all right, you had a nucleus. But outside of New York City, how many rabbis had that dilemma? The Balabatim said, what good is having Kabbalat Shabbos at 4:30? We haven't gotten home from work yet. And late Friday night service, then they developed an Oneg Shabbat, and the Young Israels, the Oneg Shabbat was in place in lieu of the late Friday night service. Some people developed an Oneg Shabbat where they said Kriyat Shema, they did at least a drop of davening. It has the advantage that at least the Balabatim say Kriyat Shema. It has the disadvantage that you're sanctioning Chilul Shabbos. I have to say, Lekovit South Africa, that today even South Africa has undergone major changes. The percentage of Jews who are Balei Tshuva in South Africa is probably the highest percentage in the world. It would not surprise me if South African Jewry is reaching, and I can be corrected, and I would even be happy to hear I'm underestimating, 50% of the Jews are Shema Torah Mitzvot. 90% of the Shema Shabbos are Balei Tshuva. I think I told you in Cape Town, the head of the Chavra Kadisha, who's FFB, told me he has a rule, no one can join the Chavra Kadisha until they've been Shema Shabbos for 10 years. I would say 7 years is sufficient, but he has a rule, 10 years. But this ain't Achinami, this is a very basic tshuva that puts down the basic concept. You want to be machmir with a minhag? Gesunte heit. But to be mekel and change your nisa with a minhag? Absolutely not. But you have to understand what minhag means. What Jews do when there's... We don't know for sure. We can't be certain. It's rofefet. It's weak. We're in doubt. What Jews do determines the issue. 100%. Okay. I'm going to go further in a second.
Does it remove the doubt of that
point? Remove what?
Does it remove the doubt of that point?
Absolutely.
So if minhag changes, then too late.
Well... We'll talk about that. What you're talking about, I'm going to reach. I'm going to show you something amazing, but we got to get there. Shlav, shlav. Let me just learn all the names. Daniel Abraham. Daniel Yamakpet. Simcha Lauer. And the Saniel Fishman is out fishing. What's happening? Danny Schumann. His computer is here. When the computer's here, does that count today? What do you say? Yecheskel Gerevich. Sam Frumson. He's in the other class, something, or Shmuel Berkowitz, all right? Yehudi Yisrael, anything new with his father? Standard. Steve Bresla, Moshe Spira, David Schwartz. That's David Schwartz. 1 second, your name. Wait, you were in class, are you in the other class? And didn't you tell me you can't make this class? Do you have Ritter things that speak Torah or something? That wasn't me. I'm used to David. I wasn't born yesterday. Oh boy, what I see. Then 10 years from now, they're suffering the rabbin, and suddenly, how can I help? How can I give you an answer 10 years from now if I don't know you? If I know you, it's a different story. Ellie, I'm going to do something very fascinating now. I'm going to tell you a little story and then I begin. Watch. Many years ago, in the Kollel, many years ago, it must be more than 20 years ago, I touched upon a topic that I dealt with in great length last year or the year before, I forget already, when the Beit Yosef contradicts himself. He says one thing in the Shulchan Aruch and another thing in the Beit Yosef. So how do you deal with it? Well, I gave a few examples. Over the years, endless students who contacted me, they found more examples. So I want to give you a few examples. How do I know I'm right? How do I know this is correct? How can I handle the rhythm of the halacha that this makes sense, it speaks to you? Ellie, I'm going to give you a few examples. But believe me, you will probably find in a lifetime of learning another 100 such examples. Okay? But let me show you that I'm hitting the nail on the head, that my halachic sense is absolutely correct. What is your first name?
Javi.
Javi, do you ever make a salad on Shabbos? Yes. Tell me, do you add the spice to the salad? Do you add vinegar to the salad? Do you add salad dressing? Yes. No. I want to ask you a question. I had a lot of fun. I always see these four volumes published by Feldheim, the 39 Malachas. Okay? Four tremendous volumes. So I wanted to see, you know, what the volumes are about. So I went down and I took it out of the Grist library and I looked at it, very impressed. Now I see why it's a bestseller. One of the Malachot, Malachot 28, is called Ma'abed, tanning. Tell me, adding vinegar to a salad may be an Isidi or writer on Shabbos of Ma'abed? What's the connection? Very fascinating. What is Ma'abed? First of all, how do we know Lamed Tet Malachot? Let's begin at the beginning. How do we know Lamed Tet Malachot? David, how do we know? Anything that was done in the Mishkan is a Malachot. Those are the Lamed Tet Malachot that are usher dioraita. So he's very good. Tanning was required to prepare the hides of the rams and of the tachash, an animal endowed with beautiful fur that were used for the coverings of the Mishkan. The basic premise of Ma'abed, raw hides are highly perishable and will rapidly decompose and rot, I love his English, and rot if not properly preserved. The process of preserving the hides and transforming them into leather is called tanning. And the malacha of Ma'abed is to preserve animal skins. Okay? This is a malacha dioraita, one of the 39 malachot. Look into the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Chet Amud Aleph, Mishnah, at the very bottom of the Amud. Ein osin chilmi b'shabbos. What is chilmi? Look into Schottenstein's translation. I'm becoming a real up-to-date American student today. Schottenstein. In our days, we used to quote Sansino. I think I told you that once in a while we would see the Rav Sansino. And we fellas said, Eidit Nemanah, it was all scribbled over with his translations. In other words, wherever he found a mistake or a translation he didn't like, he scribbled something. It would be interesting to know if anyone has that Sansino today. One may not prepare brine on the Sabbath. Aval osuchu et meimelech v'tovel bechem pito v'notein letoch hatavshil. But you can make a little bit salt water, like our vinegar, dip your bread in, and put a little bit into what you're cooking, what you brought to the table. You can't put it in while it's cooking on Shabbos, because of bishul, but when you bring it to the table, you can add salad dressing. That says, how can you do anything? How are you allowed? Whether you do a little, whether you do a lot, you shouldn't be allowed, because what are you doing by adding the salt, the vinegar, the salad dressing? You are, what word can we use in English? You are tanning the salad. You are fixing the salad. You are playing with the contents. You're making it much better. It is a toldah of tanning. And I have to tell you that on page 904, he goes into the whole problem. You're preserving the food. That's the proper word. And just like you're preserving the leather, this is a toldah. This is forbidden. In the year of the Talmud and Shulchan Aruch, refrigerators were completely unheard of. It was simply a fact of life that fruits, vegetables, meat, poultry, and fish would rapidly spoil if not properly eaten or preserved in salts and similar preservatives. Consequently, when families had an animal slaughtered, the hides and much of the meat would be preserved for storage and later use. And he goes on and on to explain this connection to tanning. Gentlemen, Rabbi Reuben, relax yourself. Rabbi Reuben, relax yourself. Rabbi Yitzchak, your question, I saw your face contorted. Your question will be answered in a few moments. Why can't you learn from your classmates? Look at their savlanut. They sit here with such patience. Look at Herb. Look at Michael. Look at Steve. And you're bursting a gut. Gentlemen, very interesting. Very. See the problem, Chavi? Very interesting.
If we don't take notes.
He's okay. Yitzchak is more than okay. Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem. We only know each other on to 65 years at least, maybe. Yeah, on to 65 years. Okay.
I thought I knew.
No, you know me. I was already a YU graduate when you met me. When I knew him, we were chasing girls in high school. Please, don't overstate the case. There's a central reunion going on upstairs. So I said, gee, when do we do an MTA reunion? But I said, when I was in MTA, we all wished we were in Central. Believe me, that was our dream. And by the way, these words I've just said are very healthy, very Torah-dic. You have to hear these words. You have to know a boy is a boy and a girl is a girl. God have mercy on us if we don't know that a girl attracts, that a boy seeks. This is the secret of life. And we have to have a healthy Torah attitude. And I gave 1 year of lectures on this. I stand on my lectures. God have mercy, what's happened to this world. Excuse me, sir. Baruch Hashem, Baruch Hashem. If we don't run, there's no tomorrow. No kids, no aggravation. It's great. Know what to spend money on. But then they bury you and you have $2 million in the bank.
No,
big deal.
No.
Baruch Hashem, I don't say a word. You know some of my children. I don't have to be ashamed. Okay, back here. Gentlemen, very fascinating Gemara. First of all, I want to calm Yitzchak down. Rashi learns a different pshat altogether. Rashi learns it has nothing to do with tanning. It has to do with preparing for tomorrow. In other words, when you make a salad, so you have, for the sake of argument, Friday night I was invited out. I'm not going to be home again for Shabbos for endless months now. But I was invited out this Friday night. So there were 10 people there. So how do you know how much 10 people are going to eat? And you certainly don't want to run out of salad. You don't want to look like a cheapskate. I mean, what's the matter? It's Israel. Salad is a Kainayin Hara, fabulous salads here. So you make. Rashi was worried if you make a large salad, you're really making for Sunday and Monday and Tuesday. You follow? So therefore, there was the opinion you can't make too big a salad. What does it mean? It means make enough for 10 people. Not that if any is left over, you have to throw it out. Chas v'chalila. You follow me? Don't misunderstand me. But it means, within reason, make a nice salad, Moshe. That's Rashi's pshat. Many other Rishonim disagree, and they learn that it's a problem of tanning, of ibud, of preserving. So they will learn pshat. You just do a little. You don't overdo the spices. You don't overdo the salt. You do a normal amount, and that is fine. Look into the Rush. The Rush? On this very topic, on this very Gemara, Daf Kuf Ayin Dalet Amid Aleph in the Rush. And the Rush says, after explaining the Machlaikis, Aval Ose Me Melech Mu'atin, the Tawel Bechem Pito, V'notein L'toch HaTavshil, you make a little, you do, you eat normally. And he quotes the Ka'ama Fuk Chazi Mai Ama Davar. See the way the people act. This is Torah. This is Judaism. This is tradition. You look into the Kabbin Netanel. And I know many of his relatives. Anyone named Weil descends from the Kabbin Netanel, Reb Netanel Weil. He was one of the end of the Rishonic period in Germany. And you look into his footnote on the Rush, V'lismoch al haminhag v'lo al halacha. Those are very sharp words. That what? You throw the halacha out? No, what he means to say is, look, it's a machlokes, and you really can't measure. How can you measure how much salad to make? How can you measure how much salt to throw on it? How can you measure how much vinegar? Fuk chazi Amadaba. And I want to tell you something. This is where our grandmother's kitchen is probably the most important factor in determining the laws of kashrut. And that I heard from the Rav time and time again. And legend has it that one time the Rebbetzin was in the hospital, and when she came home, she started yelling at the Rav and her son Chaim that, "I have to kasher my whole kitchen. What did you people do while I was gone?" And that's the women. You have to learn, you have to watch, you have to observe. And that concept of fukhazi becomes critical. We are a religion of the book, but we are a religion of deed. We are a Torah that we have to learn, but we are a Torah that we have to observe. And that rush and that kabbinetanel is critical to our understanding. It's a beautiful concept. And they use exactly the words that appear in Shas four different times. Fuk chazi mai ama devar. Go and see what the people are doing. There's no question that it means people who care, people who observe, people that have tradition. But that's Yiddishkeit. And here you have the unbelievable example. I lived this. I was shocked that this little story, I've told it many times, but it's worth telling again. It says everything. It says everything. Moshe, I told you the story with the Chafetz Chaim's Kiddush cup. It's unbelievable. Reb Mendel Zaks, the name mean anything to you? Chesky, Reb Mendel Zaks, ask your grandfather. Chafetz Chaim's son-in-law, did you read Washington? Did you study one? What are you waiting for? The third printing will sell out and then they'll tell me, all gone, like we're like with Revel and Silva. You don't know how much aggravation I've had. Hi, David. Excuse me? Copies? What about Washington? The Rebbe didn't publish it. It's published by a publisher. Alavai, I should get royalties that amount to more than $100 on it. Baruch Hashem, let's not complain. But ask the publisher to make a grant to Gris Kolel in honor of Rakefet. Don't ask what I tried to do. Nowhere. Forget it. Get the safe. It'll be the best investment you ever made. There's one picture there that's worth more than the whole purchase price. Whenever you're depressed, you look at that picture and you say, Yesh tikva le'achiteinu. When the Vilna Gaon can sit with the Baal Shem Tov, we have a future. Baruch Hashem. Right or wrong, yes.
The two rabbis are sitting there.
With the Rav. You got it. David, listen carefully. So Reb Mendel was the Boichin in the yeshiva. Chafetz Chaim's son-in-law. And his old age he spent in Matzah stuff. I used to see him here occasionally, and you know, he used to come into my class, give a bechina to the students. We knew each other. And then he died. And the Rebbetzin was left widowed, and every Friday night, another yeshiva bacher living in Matzah stuff or going to Torah would come in and make Kiddush for the Rebbetzin. So, student comes in, the Rebbetzin gives him the cup, and this young idiot says to her, "It's not enough of a shir, there's not a revi'it in the cup." And she says to this kid, "This is the cup that my father, the Chafetz Chaim, made Kiddush on." I don't know what you're laughing, I'm crying, I have tears in my eyes. It's a terrible situation. We don't eat vegetables. We don't eat strawberries. Tosfos talks about, what bracha do you make in strawberries?
Adama.
What bracha?
Adama.
Adama. Don't take it for granted. Look into Tosfos and bracha. It's a perennial. It's a machlekes ha-poskim. The Sfadim make ha-eitz. We Ashkenazim make Adama. No, what does that tell you? Tosfos ate strawberries. They didn't eat strawberries. What a world. This is, it's not Torah. It's anti-Torah. Go on and on. Forget it's a triv of the forget about the it's a triv of the Avnei Nesa. Lo nitna Torah Malachai Sharet. It's sugi after sugi and shas. Forget the Kohen should strip naked the minute he finishes the Avoda. No, lo nitna Torah Malachai Sharet. He has to go back to the locker and there he changes. Gentlemen, please don't aggravate me. Let me get away with one little word. That's all. This is the Kiddush cup that my father made the Chafetz Chaim. It's unbelievable. The world was shaking when that story happened. It spread like wildfire. That was before computers. Today it could be, you know, in every blog in the world. But this, it spread, wow. What a story. And it's a true story. So this is Yiddishkeit. Now I'll give you another example. I'm going to quote a very fascinating sugya. No, how many of you wear black hats? Some Shabbos during the week, whatever. Fine. Tell me, did you ever measure the brim?
Oh boy.
You have a brim more than a tefach? Maybe you're carrying it, Shabbos. Forget about that. You're building an ohel. You're building a tent. Right or wrong? I wear a baseball cap. I don't have a problem. During the winter, I wear also this. An Erev. I'm Samach on the Erev. I'm not, they tell the story. We're living at times. It's fabulous. They tell the story of this gear. I changed it. I'm not wearing a Yankee cap. I'm ashamed. I'm wearing a Yeshiva College baseball cap. Not the Tigers color kavod. But I can't root for Hank Greenberg. He's not alive anymore. Anyway, coming back here, they tell a story. This guy is studying to be a gear, and he's a total Shomer Shabbos. And they say to him, they quote the Gemara in Sanhedrin, "How can you be a Shomer Shabbos? Goyish a Shomer Shabbos? How can Shomer Shabbos chayev misa?" He says, "I'm samach on the erev." He says, "You understand? He's a Machal Shabbos. He's samach on the erev." So I'm samach on the erev. But imagine you're in a place without an erev, and you're walking around with a big hat. You're making a tent. Wow. Allowed, not allowed. More than a tefach, less than a tefach. I see a dohel, oil arai. Oh, you got here. But and again, it's a machlokes rishonim. So it's an oil arai, it's not a ten. No, others learn very simply, and you should know this from Mishnah Brura. No? You're allowed to wear gloves on Shabbos? You're allowed to wear gloves. I grew up in America. It's freezing. Some of you grew up Montreal. It's colder than New York. I was in three times. I was in Russia during the twice January. January, you know, between terms, I disappeared. Everyone thought I was in the army. We were in Russia. You know how cold it is? I functioned in Riga 40 degrees below centigrade. 40 degrees minus. No, can you wear gloves or you can't wear gloves? Could be. No, it's a whole machlokes achronim. Because why can't you wear gloves? Gloves are a lavush. You wear a coat, you wear a jacket. And there's a much bigger shayla if you're allowed to wear a tie on Shabbos. What purpose does a tie serve? It's just to be fancy, to be a show-off, to be a balgaiva. How are you allowed to wear a tie at all? It's a whole shayla. Where I come from, we don't wear ties at all because it's mamish shachtsanut in modern Hebrew. But to wear a tie Shabbos and a reshut harabim, but a glove covers your hands, so why should it? But there's a different problem, that a glove is something you can take on and off very easily. So the achronim were worried that you'll meet someone on the street, you'll take off your glove to shake hands, and then you'll walk Dalet Amud carrying the glove. So it's a whole machloket, whether you're allowed to wear gloves. No, I know. And how will you know? Hey, tell me, in America you wore gloves, didn't wear gloves. I hate to tell you, I didn't wear gloves. When I went to Russia, I was Matineda. The Mishnah Brura brings all this down. So There are others who learn pshat in the Gemara. You'll see why in a minute, that it's not a question of ohel, but it's a question that your hat will blow off, and you'll shem yavirenu dalet amot. You pick up the hat, and you follow me. You'll walk with the hat. You'll forget Moshe to put it back on, and you walk with the hat. You follow me, David. So very interesting question. I love the sugya. I love the word. There's a word here that, as a kid, it always impressed me. Let me show you the Gemara first, and I'll show you the source, and I'll prove my point once again. Gemara in Shabbos, Taf Kuf Lamed Chet Amid Bet, this time, 138b. And let me read the Gemara, and look up the Gemara. Hi Sinai, Shari. It's permitted to wear a hat. You're looking to Rashi, doesn't help you much. Kovish Levad Felterim. It's a felt hat. Look into Schattenstein. It was a wide brim felt hat that was worn by travelers to protect them for the sun or the rain. Okay, that makes sense. In Israel, you should know you should always wear a hat during the summer because the sun is, it's a Middle East sun. It's very warm and you lose water very rapidly. And it's very important to wear a hat a number of times over the years, I think two or three times, at least three times over the 43 plus years I'm living here, I passed out from lack of water because the sun was so hot. So I always wear a hat, winter for different reasons, and summer, chok v'lo yavah, I always wear a hat. Not that I'm ashamed to go, you can wear a yarmulke here, it's not France, it's not downtown London, it's not Paris. So the Gemara says, what do you mean you're allowed to wear a Sinai, you're allowed to wear a felt hat? We learned in a Beraita, it's asa, lo kasha. The problem of ohel, look into Rashi. If it has a tefach, you're building a tent. How can you wear a hat beyond the tefach? The whole question with an umbrella. Why can't you use an umbrella on Shabbos? And what do we say? It's building a tent, so you're not allowed to open an umbrella. It'd be a different shaila. Eli, what if you open the umbrella before Shabbos and let it there, and there's an Erev? It's an interesting shaila. Well, Minig is not to, but there were plenty of good Jews from the Rav used to say, from the Wissenschaft, from the Chachme Yisrael, from scientific scholarship, they used an umbrella on Shabbos. They opened it before, and on Shabbos it's only a temporary tent. You're going to put it down afterwards. Fine. We don't. But the Gemara says, if it has a tefach, and some of these, Barcelona, what's the famous hat that kids pay $180 for a hat? God, Barcelona, more than, God, you got to be out of your box.
So you know, the only factory that makes these conceding hats is in Spain.
And it keeps, I read about that. The New York Times had a whole article, it keeps them alive. I don't know, you can buy three New York Yankee hats for $5. Today, you can buy for $1. Yeah, they're giving them away. On the streets of Manhattan, what are you talking about? Everything is made in China today. Come on, everything. So the Gemara now asked a fabulous question. Hey, wait a minute. You're worried about a tefach. It's a tefach. It's more than a tefach. Gemara asked a fabulous question. Danny, have you ever seen a makubal? Have you ever seen a baba? Have you? Right. You wear a talus over your head. The talus hangs out. It's more than a tefach. How are you allowed to dress like that on Shabbat and walk through a Rishut HaRabim? It's the Gemara's question. Elameyate, or what do you call it? A parka with what do you call this? With the a hood. You throw the hood over your head. The hood hangs out. How are you allowed, Elameyate? Shavit v'glima tefach. Hachinami de Machayev? And the Gemara gives an unbelievable answer. Ela lo kasha, hada mahadik, hada lo mahadik. That where the hat ties around your head like a bonnet, you're allowed. When it doesn't tie around your head, you're not allowed. So what do we see? That it's not a question of ohel, it's a question of you may carry it. It'll blow off. You pick it up. You walk away with the hat. Shem yavirenu dalet amad. Shem yitalkalena dalet amad. It's the same shaila like gloves bereshut harabim, where there is no eirav. Wow. No, a tefach is for the ohel. But if it's not a problem with tefach, it's not the tefach that counts. Forget about that. It's mahadeg or lo mahadeg. You follow? The Gemara changes the meaning, plain and simple, that we misunderstood the Issa. Okay. Fabulous. Fabulous. Now what do we do in halacha l'maisa? Look into the Azarua. The Azarua, we're talking about Rabbeinu Yitzchak or Rav Moshe of Vienna. This is one of the early Ashkenazic Rishonim, the Azarua. But of course, the manuscript we had, the traditional Azarua, was a manuscript filled with missing letters and discrepancies. Along comes Machon Yerushalayim in conjunction with Machon Tarani Yeshivat Or Etzion. Now, Yeshivat Or Etzion is Rav Chaim Drukman's yeshiva. If I'm not mistaken, I can be, anyone who wants to correct me, correct me. They have been involved in working out Kitvei Yad. It's evidently projects. You know what they just published? And they tell me it's a fabulous edition, the Sfat Emet. How many of you have studied Sfat Emet? How many of you are Hasidim? How many of you are Gerer Hasidim? How many of you have Gerer blood in you? How many of you are from Poland? Anyone from Poland is apt to have Hasidic blood in him, and the chances it's Gerer. The Sfat Emet is a very hard sefer to decipher. Does anyone know why? These were notes the Rebbe wrote after his drasha by Shalosh Shuras. He wrote it Motzei Shabbos. It's Rosh Prakam. The Sfat Emet was the second Gerer Rebbe, Rebbe Yehuda Leib Alter. He was a grandson of the founder of Gerer, Rabbi Avraham Mordechai Alter. He was a very innovative, philosophic mind. I once gave a shiur where I showed that the Sfat Emet and Rav Hirsch and Mori Rebbe, Rav Soloveitchik, all reached the same conclusion in theology. Each one from a different stance, from a different point of view. It's a fabulous concept. And believe me, the Rav did not know the Sfat Emet, and Rav Hirsch did not know either one, obviously. But each one came and derived and reached the same conclusion. Fabulous. Sfat Emet, very hard to understand. They just put out its many volumes, but it is elaborated, and they work with the Kitvei Yad. They did a wonderful job. So the Azarua, if you look at the original printing, this is what it looks like. You look at the new Azarua, take a look. Block letters, everything clear, sources and footnotes. Look at the Azarua, Hilchot Shabbat, Siman Ayin Chet, Subdivision Yud, Amud Reish Lamid Gimel Omid Aleph, and it quotes the whole sugya, and the Azarua explains it, and exactly the pshat we gave, and then the Gemara goes in to the whole question of are we allowed, can we wear it tied, not tied. And look at what the Azarua says on the next page. Mihu kvanahagu kiperish Rashi. Umutalatsei bichol minei kovaim al yedei retsua kudaparishet. and you're allowed to go out with any hat as long as it has a cord attaching it to your head. V'aminim b'Yerushalmi, and he quotes the Yerushalmi, Fuk chazi ma amadava va'afilu lekula, and quotes the concept. It's not a Yerushalmi. There's a footnote on the Azarua that Kavonet Rabbeinu is not to the Yerushalmi, but it's what I quote, not to Fukhazi, but what I quoted last time. Kol Aracha Shehido Fefet Bebeitin Tseyura E Ma HaTzibor Noheg. And if the Tzibor is Noheg, Afilu Lekula, even if it is lahakel, even if you are mekel, you are allowed. This is tradition. This is halacha. This determines even issues of isa v'cheta, even delicate issues of Shabbat, carrying, not carrying, you are allowed. And nowadays, halacha l'maisa, this is what it would boil down to. If the hat fits tightly on your head, there is no problem with wearing it in an area where there is no Erev. If the hat would be a loose hat that can very easily blow away, then there would be a problem wearing it where there is no Erev. Shemei Yavirenu Dalar Amot. And I've never yet seen anyone that wears a hat that's loose that can blow away. I don't see them making hats like that today. So halacha lemaisa, when he says fuk chazi mayamadava, it means when the halacha is rofefet, you have a right to do as the people do. Let me end off the shir, although there are other outside matters I wanted to relate to, but let me end off the shir. Another example. How do I know I'm right? How do I know I'm traveling correctly? How do I know that this is the concept? An unbelievable Gemara in Menachat Daf Lamed Hei Amid Bet. Menachat Eli is probably the last place in the world where you were to imagine all the halachot of tefillin are to be found. But anyone who has just finished Shas with the Daf Yomi knows that all the halachot and tefillin are not in brachot, where they belong, but they are in Masechet Menachot. So the Gemara tells the story, Abaye Habayatev Kami to Rabbi Yosef. We're sitting in front of Rabbi Yosef. His ritzua ripped. Omalei mahu lemikdrei. Can I tie it up? The ritzua of the tefillin. Omalei ukshatem ktiv shetachei kishira tamar. It has to be a nice knot. It has to be done very nicely. And if you have one knot in it and you're going to put another one, it's not going to be nice. It's going to interfere with how nice the tefillin look. Okay? So, you can't tie it. So then he asked him, tell me, can I sew it? Give it to your wife? I don't know. Maybe you men know how to sew. Today it's a different world. Men are women. Women are men. It's a confusing world for me. But I would give it to my wife. Take black thread. Sew the ritzua together. Oma, you know what he answers him? Fuk chazi mai ama dava. Go out and see what the people do. Wow. No? Go out and see. Take a survey. And you know something? Tremendous machloket rishonim. What is the Gemara saying? Can you sew it? Or can't you sew it? Rashi says, V'chiben dey noigin kein, lo ta'aseh. Can't do it. People don't do it. With sewer rips, go out, buy a new one. Don't be a cheapskate, David. You follow? Schwarz, it has to be black. Ritzua, halacha l'moshe misinai. You know, the box of the tefillin doesn't have to be black, but the tefillin have to be black. If not, it's a psul. It's halacha l'moshe misinai. Look into Tosfot, Rabbeinu Tam, Fuk Hazi, Lahakel. People sew the straps on tefillin. And look into the Arzarua once again, Chilcha Tefillin. Here I could only find it in the original Arzarua, Chelek Rishon. I'll give it to you, page 154. And he brings down the whole Machloket Rashi and Rabbeinu Tam. And he says that it would appear from the Rishonim and from the Gemara that Rabbeinu Tam is correct. When it says, Fuk Chazi, Mai Amad Dava, it generally means Lahakel. Umori Harav Reb Simcha, Reb Simcha, of course, Talmud of Rashi, Kemokin Pirish, Mai Amad Dava, Lakula. And he says, and what is it based upon? It's based upon the Yerushalmi, Kol Halacha Sherofefet Bebeitin, V'hi Ata Yodea Mativa, Tsei Ure'ei Echatzi Benoheg Unahug, and do exactly like the Tzibur does. So look what we have here. Look what we developed. Look at the concept. This is absolute pshat. No two ways about it. That ein hachinami by halacha mina can totally abrogate the halacha. Halacha, when it comes to dini mamonet, is guidance. It's not obligatory. And this will explain so many sugyas and shas to you in a good deal of chayshim mishpat. Dini de malchut, the din is the classic example. But when it comes to yisuf v'cheta, chas v'chalila, that the minhag should be mevatel the halacha. But when we have a machloikis rishonim, when we don't understand clearly what our practice should be, fuk chazi, what the people do. That's the way the Rashbash learns pshat. That's the whole sugya with tanning the leather, salting the salad, putting brine in the salad, which brine today, the equivalent would be salad dressing. I never yet saw, with all the frumkeit today and all the different salad dressings made in Israel with 2-3 hashgachet on it, I never yet saw a warning, do not use this on Shabbat. Baruch Hashem, fuk hazi. And this with the peak cap, with the expensive black hat, with the big brim, no Erev, as long as it won't blow off, totally, totally allowed. The strap on the tefillin that rips, I want to sew it together. Can you sew it together? Machlokes Rishonim, Rashi says no, Tosfos says yes, the Arzarua is posek lahalacha, like Tosfot. Eli, when we say fuk chazi mai amad davar, generally speaking, it's lakula, not lachumra.
The Tosfos goes against the
Zaydik. It's not the first time, the Rabbeinu Tam, not the first time, and not the last time, Baruch Hashem. Now, I just want to comment on questions that you asked. Some of you went to see the display in Chassidut. And I got some very interesting questions, and I just want to tell you, that display in Chassidut was not done out of any anti-Chassidic feeling. It was done with neutral feeling. What is Chassidus all about? Overall, the display is very inspiring, very touching, and the student just told me Friday night, He says, Rebbe, I don't cry as easily as you do, but I, and this is a student who's not a youngster, and he said, I cried from start to finish when I saw that display. I told him, you have to go back and see it. I saw it three times, but you have to see it twice to really appreciate it. There are two scenes that bothered everyone, and everyone asked me the same questions. One is the shrayim with that chicken, and the other one is the gatu with the dance, what did I call that? The mitzvah dance. So I just want to tell you, the shrayim, I gave lectures on this many years ago when I dealt on Hasidus. I'm very proud of those lectures. Of course, Hasidim all over the world were listening and they didn't find one mistake. And I'm an outsider looking in. You have to be a Hasid to understand shrayim is based upon a Yerushalmi and Sanhedrin. That after they had a suda for Ibra Chodesh, Ibra Hashanah, and they would take the crumbs, Yehei Chalki, I should be on a level, be part of the Rebbeim who wait here, and the Gedolei Yisrael. So it's like shituf that you become attached to the Rebbe. If I can put it in a beautiful fashion, there's a Norman Rockwell a picture that is beautiful of a boy and a girl, a teenage boy and a girl, drinking out of a malted, or what you would call an ice cream soda, with two straws out of the same cup. So that's the concept here. That's a concept of love, a concept of identity, and the same concept here that the Rebbe and the Chassid share the chicken. Now, I don't say if I'd be a Rebbe, and I could have been a Rebbe, then I have a title, the Maplewood Rebbe, a beautiful title, it's fine. Rabbi of Maplewood, you need a city in Chutzlavich, you can't be a Rebbe with an Israeli title yet, but the Maplewood Rebbe is Zeya Shane, Zeya Fine. So I would do like the Lubavitcher. I would, what they did in Lubavitch, they brought the cake before the Rebbe, a tremendous plate, was all covered, the Rebbe made a bracha, it was covered because he made a bracha on wine first, the whole shayla of wine, cake, I don't have to elaborate, and the Rebbe, then he had a piece of cake, and everyone got a piece from this. So that is shrayim on a much more hygienic level, which would, but you have to be a chassid to understand what you saw there, not be upset by it. And someone said to me, it's like they're making fools out of the chassidim, chas v'chalila, that was not their intention, but they're showing you what chassidus is. As far as the mitzvah tans, that is the Nadvana, if I'm not mistaken, it's the Nadvana Rebbe dancing with his daughter. And she is in ecstasy, she's crying, she's wiping away tears. Oh, you have to be a chassid to understand it. Believe me, when I see my daughters, I also kiss them. I don't do a mitzvah tans. It's a little different. And it doesn't look nice, you see. It looks like, I don't want to use the words that the women have used when they're the girl with the dancing, but that's chassidus, that's the mitzvah tans, that's a wedding, that's a rebbe. You have to understand, when a rebbe marries off a child, it's continuity. It's continuity. This is very important, chassidus. The Belzer Rebbe, the present Belzer Rebbe, who resuscitated Belz from nothing, to what he did to such a major, major area and such a major achievement, the Belzer Rebbe had no children for many, many years. Finally, after much treatment and medical help, and I know doctors who were involved and nurses who were involved, you don't know what people go through to have children. When you have children easily, your problem is birth control. When you don't have children, Hashem Yirachem, what people go through. And finally had a son. And I remember this son, I remember the Brit that Chassidim came in from Europe already, was the 70s, was resuscitated, or the 80s. And I remember on Israeli TV, they showed the biggest challah in the world coming through customs, baked in Antwerp by Belzer Chassidim. It must have been five times longer than this room is. How they got it on the plane, only allowed could have delivered to the Belzer Rebbe. So you understand now, that Belzer Rebbe, that kid grew up, married a Lemberger, who may be distantly related to my wife's family. Also, there's Lemberger in the family, and they're Belzer Chassidim. And I believe he has 12 children today. So you see, the Chassidim have continuity, which becomes so important. Now, for us, Continuity, you look at a dummy like Rakefet. Who's your father? You understand? What yichus do you have? All right, I discovered yichus 2 years ago. I have big yichus. But the point is, we don't need... who's going to take my place? It can be someone with no yichus whatsoever. But he came up the ladder. He has a good mind. He developed. This is a Litvish Welt. The Litvish yeshiva that were makpid only within the family ultimately fell apart. Take a look what happened to Tells. When you're makpid only within the family, who says you're going to have 10 generations later someone on the level of what was 100 years earlier? In YU, Torah Vedas, Chaim Berlin, what's the greatness? It's a public institution. Even Mir may belong to the Finkels, but you have 100 yeshiva under one roof there, Chabura on top of Chabura. And if you have the goods, students gather around you. No, in the Hasidic world, I'm going to go, I'm a Rebbe. No, who's your father? What do you mean you're a Rebbe? Who is your grandfather? What do you mean? What do you mean? Who's a... No, if I be a Rebbe, I'd wear a Shtreimel. I know what I have to do. Don't worry about it. I'd borrow Moshe's for during the week. I'd borrow his hat. Shabbos already a Spudik, a Shtreimel. Okay, so I just want to say about the museum, it's a beautiful exhibition. It has to be explained. This is Hasidus. And it's going to go all over the world, beginning with November, I understand. So, Baruch Hashem, it's going to Belgium, it's going to London, it's going to New York. It really is a beautiful exhibition, in my opinion. And Chaval, I would have liked to have taken the whole Kol Odeh and show you piece by piece. My wife has come, and she comes from Belz. And very fascinating. Now, I just want to show you something that burns me up, but what can we do? I got a beautiful letter from a Talmud. This is Josh Schneider in West Hempstead. And spent $16, $17 to send me this magazine with another magazine. It's from Yateid Ne'amah. It's from Hamodiah. Please mention to the boys in the shir that how jealous I am of them that they get to sit through the shir. I hope to visit Israel soon and look forward to sitting in a shir or two. Will YU charge me with a question mark? No, YU will not charge you. It's on the house. So first of all, Yitzhak is going to get very excited in a minute. There's a beautiful article here on Rav Lesson's grandson. I know this grandson. He's a surgeon from the coast. This is Rav Lesson's picture. This is Rav Lesson's son. This is the grandson. He was in the Kollel. We had a whole ceremony here years ago because I got the only smicha his grandfather gave in America. And I gave him a copy of my smicha from his grandfather. And he gave me copies of his grandfather's smichas from Europe. And the article, what this man did, he sought out the Lithuanians who saved Jews. And he raised money to give them pensions. And beautiful pictures. Here's Rav Lesson again with a son and a grandson. That is a brother of the doctor here. But that's beautiful. What burns me up, there's an article on the Bronx. The old Bronx. And it talks about the most famous rabbi in the Bronx when I was growing up, Harav Moshe Bick. And look what it says on page 32. He got smicha in Europe at the young age of 14 and came to America in 1925. He moved to the Bronx in 1937 when he was hired as the rav of the Anshei Krashnik Shul in the East Bronx. Gentlemen, Reb Moshe Bick might have gotten smicha from a relative in Meshbetz at 14. I mean, at 14. You degrade your grandfather.
Do you know how many descendants he left?
My dear students, Reb Moshe Bick is a 1932 musmak of the exact yeshiva that has given you or will give you smicha. It is known as Yeshivas Reb Yitzchak Elchanan. And if anyone believes I'm lying, this is an official document of Yeshivas Reb Yitzchak Elchanan. He left a tremendous family.
How many
descendants? And in Israel, that's nothing. That doesn't even 150 is garnished, McGarnished. But Kanayin Hara, for the Bronx, It is fabulous. He was a great individual. If anyone wants an old issue of Zman with some very interesting articles, yours for the taking. Until we meet again in health and happiness, I wouldn't miss tomorrow's Shia for all the computers that are being made in China. Das Vadanya. Ah, we did it. We did it. I need this. I need yet, but.
Is Josh?